Hey, Sound Opinions listeners, if you support us on Patreon, you get to listen to our podcast ad-free on Patreon.
Who took the bomb?
You're listening to Sound Opinions, and this week we're talking with filmmaker Sasha Jenkins about his new documentary on the hip-hop innovator Biz Markie. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Cott. But first, let's review some new music from Cleo Soul, Cherry Glazer, and Boy Genius.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Don't you ever.
That is a track called In Your Own Home from the new Cleo Soul record, Gold. If you don't know that name, Cleo Soul, you may know her from 11 Salt albums.
11, yes.
Four reviewed last year?
Yes.
Yeah. We've reviewed a few of those on the show. Salt is a big favorite around here. She's a big part of that group. There's a lot of mystery surrounding Salt. The one thing we do know is that one Dean Josiah Cover, otherwise known as Inflow, is the producer, multi-instrumentalist, songwriter in the group. Cleo happens to be his wife. She's involved in a lot of the vocals that are used on those albums. But Cleo has her own career going as well.
Mm-hmm.
Gold is now her fourth solo album. There's been two Salt-like releases, Heaven and Gold, within a couple of weeks.
A span of
no
weeks.
No hype,
yeah.
No preambles.
Nope.
Like Salt, they just sort of appear out of the ether, and here we have a new album. Cleo Soul, unlike Salt, does perform live. She sold out shows recently in England. Huge attraction. London's Royal Albert Hall hosted a couple of nights. Mm-hmm. With Cleo Soul recently. So she is developing a much higher profile in the UK currently than she has in the US. But these releases are slowly changing things. She's emerging as an artist in her own right. So Heaven and Gold came out consecutively. We're going to focus on the latest of the two.
Gold.
And let's play a track from that record. There Will Be No Crying from Cleo Soul on Sound Opinions.
'Cause there will be no crying.
No crying.
There will be no fighting.
No fighting.
'Cause I can't give it. No, 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 no. There will be no.
Cleo Soul, There Will Be No Crying. Cleopatra Zvezdana Nikolic, Greg. Born of a Serbian-Spanish mom and a Jamaican father, both jazz musicians. That is a, what a rich heritage, right?
Yeah.
And I think the thing with both Cleo Soul and Salt, and I want to emphasize, if you're wondering who we're talking about, S-A-U-L-T. All right, 11 albums, 4 last year. Greg and I are big fans, full of mystery. I think the thing to emphasize is how broad the musical influences are, both for Cleo Soul and for Salt. Gold album is primarily a gospel record, a modern gospel, neo-soul, R&B record in which I hear a lot of Stevie Wonder, a lot of Erykah Badu, a lot of Jill Scott. But there's more. You know, that song, Please Don't End It All. Did you catch where the chorus comes from?
No.
Black Sabbath. She's echoing Changes by Black Sabbath.
Okay. You're gonna find your way, and all it takes is better days, 'cause everybody's going through changes.
And, you know, I think that underscores the approach that she and her husband, Inflo, take. They are musically voracious, all over the map. And, you know, the electronic and soul elements coming together, soul real instruments and electronic production that is, you know, second to none. But when I say this is a gospel album, look, by no means is the album 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks before Gold. Heaven, by no means is it a bad record, but it's less focused. It's kind of all over the map, whereas Gold is pretty darn near a masterpiece, Greg. This is a true record of transcendence. And Cleo has said this album was made for God. And wow, it sounds that way in terms of uplift and spirituality. However you define the higher power, it is about drawing on it to get through difficult times, to maintain hope, which is essential in these often very dark days. Both with Salt and Cleo Soul, there hasn't been a bad record. There's just been records that are a little more focused than others and more satisfying beginning to end than others. And I think this is Cleo Soul's best, because I went back, and of course you have to listen to Heaven, being only 2 weeks ago, and the other two albums proper that preceded it. There have been EPs, there's been all the Salt work. You know, I want to pose a question to you, but before I hear your thoughts, don't you think to some extent both Cleo and Salt are hurting themselves by releasing so much music?
Yeah. Well, I don't even think that factors into what they're thinking about, because clearly it's not a good idea to release so much music to the point where people just get overwhelmed
Some greatness. Yeah.
And the thing is, there's so much good stuff in those records. You know, you think, oh man, if it would, you know, if they consolidated the absolute cream of the crop to one record instead of four, imagine what you'd have. But I'm not complaining, you know. I love the fact that they seem to be working outside the traditional parameters of what used to be the music industry and doing things on their own terms completely. They're incredibly prolific. I wonder if Inflo ever sleeps, let alone Cleo. It's just an incredible output of material. It's not quite, her records are not quite as musically ambitious as the Salt records.
Right.
They are really sprawling in terms of their reach. There's an aggressive side to Salt that she never really approaches.
No.
But this is a great meditative type of record. You know, it's one of those records where the voice fits beautifully with those spacious arrangements. And the songs are, the phrases are sort of like mantras. Things will get better. Only love can wait. There will be no crying. Please don't end it all.
Right.
We're not talking about deep sentiments here, but it's more about just contemplation, meditation, a little bit, I would say escapism, but I think there's points in this record where it goes beyond that.
Well,
and you mentioned
influence. If you look at the lyrics, they almost read like prayers.
Yeah, it is prayerful, and it is definitely like you're contemplating, meditating. The gospel stuff is what really I love the most.
Mm-hmm.
When the gospel element is really foregrounded, and her voice really starts to show its range, you know, that song, Lost Angel, is just incredible.
And through love, our souls
Will Be No Crying. I love that song. In Your Own Home was the track that really hit home for me. Really stretching her voice. That soul vibe is there. Something more intense in that song. The yearning. And the consolation, which is a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you ever be afraid in your own home. And I'm thinking about what's going on in the Middle East right now.
Yeah.
And Ukraine. And those lines just really hit me hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just kind of like this, okay. Nobody should be afraid in their own home, but half the world is, you know?
I will confess and pay you a compliment. I mean, I was always respecting gospel music. I just didn't feel like I ever had a handle on it until I read your book about Mavis Staples and putting gospel in the context of community activism, really,
yeah.
And the whole history of the civil rights movement, you know. And since I have been, a huge fan, listening to the, you know, you name it, going back to the Reverend Thomas A. Dorsey,
right.
Albertina Walker, Mahalia Jackson, of course, the Staples, and I think that Cleo Soul fits very much in that lineage, modern and soulful, sexy and aware of the world around us, but reaching for a higher purpose.
Right, right, absolutely.
Well, that's what we thought on Cleo Soul. Now we want to hear from you. Leave us a message with your thoughts on our website, soundopinions.org. When we return, more new music, album reviews of Boy Genius and Cherry Glazer, and a conversation about the legacy of Biz Markie. That's coming up on Sound Opinions. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. Every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island. So we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, Lemonade Shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Out here it gets so dark, you can see the stars, the ones the headline said this morning were being spat out by what we thought was just destroying everything for good.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot. That is a little bit of a track called Black Hole from a new EP called The Rest from Boy Genius. Boy Genius, man, this is their year. 2023, the year of Boy Genius. Mr. Kot, I've said it before, I'll say it again. When I'm talking to my 18-year-old college students, the reverence with which they speak of this supergroup, Julian Baker, Phoebe Bridgers, and Lucy Dacus, I haven't seen it since kids used to talk about Nirvana,
mm-hmm.
when Kurt Cobain was alive, okay? Supergroup is a title that is barely relevant. Yes, they all three had careers on their own before coming together, but it truly is not like take one thing from column A and another from column C. These three friends, in joining together, have created an entity even bigger than themselves, and by no means is that to slight their solo output. Started with an EP back in 2018, then the debut studio album, The Record. Simple title, came out this spring, and Alex Claiborne and I got to have a splendid chat with all three members of Boy Genius while they were in bed together. And don't read that wrong. They are way out in front in their outspokenness about gay rights and are proud to take a stand. And it is connecting with people. One of the many things connecting with this audience that is absolutely devoted to them, and which, you know, the high point this year was they headlined Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Show me an indie band able to do that. Now comes this EP, The Rest. The rest of what? Are they about to take a rest and retire the supergroup for a little while to go back to their solo careers? Are they just wanting a rest after a year of nonstop touring and promoting that record? Are these songs that were left off the record, the album? I think it's a little of all of them. Let's play a track and we'll come back and give our opinions about the latest from Boy Genius. Don't usually review EPs, but this is an important band. This is a song called Powers by Boy Genius on Sound Opinions.
The tale of a comet burned up in an instant. The destruction.
That is a track called Powers from the new Boy Genius EP, The Rest. We should point out, we refer to them as an indie band. They all come from indie music backgrounds. They're,
right,
of course, recording for powerhouse label Interscope, but there's still a sensibility of that independent music scene. You can hear it in the voices of these three women and in the way they write songs. You know, The Rest makes it sound like an afterthought, in the same way that The Record, their debut album, made it sound like a generic record, you know? But this is not a record of leftovers. This was this was recorded, you know, separately from the sessions for The Record. And these four songs belong together. I was thinking it's probably just going to be a bunch of tracks from that session, but it's not. It is very different in tone from the debut album. The debut album was more, you know, more rock, you know.
Yeah.
This is a little bit folkier and more atmospheric. In fact, there's drums, from what I can hear, programmed drums, I think, on only one of the four tracks.
Mm-hmm.
It's really more insular. These three personalities, Julian Baker, okay, she's got this cosmic kind of vibe going in this record. She's scrappy and cosmic. Then there's Lucy Dacus, who is very wry and subtly humorous.
Yeah.
She brings that to the table.
Cutting wit.
And then Phoebe Bridgers with that sort of introspective, ghostly sound. But I hear the three personalities merging in a lot of ways. The sum greater than the parts, you know, that whole idea. They are definitely becoming a band. And you start to hear it, the way they're blending together. And it finishes on that song, Powers, which to me is a perfect capstone, a perfect way, the three voices together, the force of our impact, the fission, the hum of our contact, the sound of our collision.
The force of our impact, the fission, the hum of our contact, the sound of our collision.
Besides being a great song that should have been on the Oppenheimer soundtrack, really talks about the band, you know, becoming a band.
You know, Oppenheimer or Barbie or both.
Yeah,
Barbenheimer,
right.
You know, I mean, that is, in a nutshell, you just nailed something there. Boy Genius is the Barbenheimer of 2023.
Yeah, right.
Because there's a little of both. The other thing about Powers that I love, Greg, is just that way that brass comes in,
mm-hmm.
right? There's a little bit of orc pop there. There's a little more electronic on these tracks, but
right.
very subtle. You know, it's not like they're, let's do our experimental toss away, you know, these were leftover songs.
Right.
No, you know, and let's not forget that these young women are getting older by the day. We all are, right? And they're looking at life from, you know, a perspective. Those lines, I want to live a vibrant life, but I want to die a boring death. Not mm-hmm. everybody gets the chance to live a life that isn't dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
I want to live a vibrant life, but I want to die a boring death. I know I was a disappointment. Know you wanted me to take a risk. Not everybody gets the chance to live a life that isn't dangerous.
Right? And man, you know, the world of the working musician is one that is fraught with landmines, you know, and hell, just living in 2023
yeah.
is fraught with landmines. These women are deep thinkers. I also read an interview with them about these songs in particular, where Julian Baker was just casually saying, I'd been reading Cruising Utopia by Jose Esteban Munoz, talking about the idea of lived experience being its own work of art, and then the art needing a witness to be savored and appreciated.
Right.
It's like, you know, so partly when Alex and I were talking to them, partly they're making inside jokes and laughing at each other as they roll around in this huge bed.
Right.
And partly they're like spurring each other on to artistic discoveries and intellectual revelations. I mean, they think about what they do and then they do it very naturally. It just comes off as just like, of course, that's what this music sounds
well,
like. These friends are making it.
They're finishing each other's sentences in these
yes.
songs, too. And
yeah.
that's what I think is really starting to show up. And I really hope, as much as I love each of their solo careers, I can't wait for another album from these guys next year.
I agree. I mean, if they went out on the rest, I think it would be a fine capstone. But just greedily, I would like more Boy Genius, please, always.
Yes.
I can't kick my bad habits.
That is a track called Bad Habit from the new Cherry Glazer record, I Don't Want You Anymore. Fourth album from Cherry Glazer. Cherry Glazer is basically Clementine Creevy. She has been making music since she was a teenager. I saw her in 2017 on the heels of her second album, Apocalyptic.
Great title.
At South by Southwest. And she, you know, Clementine came across as this sort of scrappy garage rock hellion, and it was an exciting show. Since then, on the subsequent records, Stuffed and Ready in 2019, and now the new one, I Don't Want You Anymore, we're starting to see a more expansive approach to the music. It seems there's no limitations on Clementine Creevy's musical vision. We're going to review the album in a second. Let's play a track from it. It's called Soft Like a Flower from Cherry Glazer on Sound Opinions.
Soft Like a Flower from the fourth album by Cherry Glazer, I Don't Want You Anymore. Greg, it probably at this point is a Sound Opinions cliche when the two of us talk about how we are devoted to that soft, hard, ugly, sweet mixture. But, you know, that's a core staple of all great rock music, and Cherry Glazer makes great rock music,
mm-hmm.
you know, the way Nirvana could take it way down and gentle and super melodic and then explode in a frenzy. They do that very well, Clementine and her bandmates. You know, the melodies are beautiful and then the explosions are just fantastic. I think thematically, crafted, as so much great music we've heard of late was, during the pandemic, this is a record that mixes devotion and surrender or obsession apathy and dependency. It's all summed up in that track, I Could Eat You Like a Pill. I Eat You Like a Pill is the name of the track, and the lyric goes, I could eat you like a pill. I mean, what a way to describe an obsessive, loving devotion to anyone or anything. This is a really fun album. You know, I think it really is perfecting what Jerry Glazer's always been going for. That hard, soft, sweet, sour combination is there to some extent on the previous three records, but man, this one knocks it out of the park. It's just one great song after another, and Clementine is just an incredible songwriter and front person.
Yeah, she's really, you know, everybody says pick a lane. Well, she says, I want all the lanes.
Right.
You know, musically.
Why limit yourself?
So there's you know, many, many directions that she wants to proceed in. You know, that whole idea, you're absolutely right. The record is about love being an addiction and talking about, you know, at the end, she basically says, I want to get rid of you, but I can't. You
right.
know?
Right.
There's no cure for me, is what she's saying. And the music reflects that, you know, this whole notion, touched you with my chaos to me is a key song because it really describes what's going on in this record. I think there's going to be some people who say, well, I don't like the disco song. I don't like the song with the, you know, the blousy ballad, you know, and there are examples of that. You mentioned alternative rock, and I think that's her comfort zone, and she does it very, very well. Soft Like a Flower is really a great track in that vein, that sort of quiet, loud approach. Ready for You is another one example of that. And the other one I really love, Bad Habit, we played that right off the top. I was not expecting that at all. That sort of wonky machine thing with those episodic drums going on.
Yeah.
She's really taking her music in some fascinating directions. Not all of it works for me, but when it works great. And I think she's just challenging herself to keep growing as a songwriter. She's so young, and she's already got four albums under her belt.
Mm-hmm.
She could go anywhere with this, so it's a great advance for her music.
A lot of good music this week.
Absolutely.
That's what we thought, though, of Jerry Glazer and Boy Genius. As always, we want to hear from you. Leave us a message on soundopinions.org. Give us your review. Coming up, the story of Biz Markie with Sasha Jenkins. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions. Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crow portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And we're back. This week, we're taking a look at the life of the creative, effervescent hip-hop artist Biz Markie, who died at age 57 in July of 2021. There's a new documentary out now that captures some of what made Biz one of the greatest rappers ever. It was made by a producer, writer, and filmmaker, Sasha Jenkins. It's called All Up in the Biz. Sasha, welcome to Sound Opinions.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
I gotta say, I am a big Biz Markie fan. I have a man crush on Biz Markie since I was a kid. And I think you probably did too. I'm thinking you're probably right about the right age when Biz was just starting to break in big time in hip-hop world. And this is a wonderful documentary. What prompted you to want to do a complete look at Biz's life?
Well, when Biz was alive, I met with him, actually. He reached out to me, sought me out. He was interested in making a doc about his life, finally. And we had a great conversation and interesting, funny guy. And we talked about all the things that we could potentially do, including the addition of puppets. And I put together a deck and I took it out there and I couldn't get any buyers. I couldn't get anyone to do it. And then he passed away. And then somehow it came back around to me. The estate reached out to Mass Appeal, and I was a partner there, and I was interested yet again in trying to tell the story, and this time it worked out.
You know, it's there are so many sides to Biz Markie that are illuminated by Up in the Biz. You know, Clown Prince of Hip Hop, all right? Anybody of a certain age remembers that. And it's so limiting. You know, one of the things, Sasha, that I was so struck by, and I thought I knew Biz's career well, was in addition to being very ambitious and competitive, as all rappers in that era, in every era, have been, right? He was generous. How much he fostered the careers of other artists, gave them a leg up, and, you know, spread the word of hip hop in general, not just the career of Biz Markie.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was a sensitive guy. I think he was someone who was seen as other or different and had rough circumstances that he had to live through. And I think that gave him a sensitivity, you know, where he just wanted to be liked by people and he wanted to like people. And he was just a good guy. I mean, not often in hip hop do you get to tell a story about a guy who's like a complete goofball, who's completely comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. But still has the respect of the hardest thugs in hip-hop. You know, the most respected lyricists in hip-hop will shed tears for the man.
Oh, that well, scene at the end where Big Daddy Kane kind of breaks up, remembering Biz, as I wouldn't be here without him.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, he's like hip-hop's Jesus. Hmm. Hip-hop's Forrest Gump, or it's a combination of hip-hop's Jesus and Forrest Gump. I mean, he just was everywhere. And he touched people in ways that were just very human, very sensitive, not very competitive. Mm-hmm. Although in the film, you see he also had a competitive side where Eric Sermon talked about how he ran into him at the Waffle House and asked him how his demo was going, but kind of like, you know, not, as he said, he wasn't being very supportive when he asked about his demo, which is hilarious.
Yeah. Tell us, especially for listeners who don't know, and we're going to try to encourage them to see this film because it's a great look at the earliest days of hip-hop, the evolution of hip-hop on the East Coast, as well as one fascinating individual. Tell us, you know, the accidental way that Biz, you know, fell into beatboxing, fell into rapping.
The accidental way he fell into it?
Well, yeah, it was kind of like, you know, he didn't invent beatboxing. He heard it, and then he perfected it.
Well, yeah, he heard it and kind of made his own style, which hip-hop is all about. It's one thing to copy, which isn't really respected, but it's okay to copy and kind of carve out your own sort of style or niche. And that's basically what he did with Dougie Fresh. He's kind of watched what Dougie Fresh did, was completely floored by what he did, and very humbly asked him, like, hey, can I come to your house? Like, you know, can I, basically, can I learn from you what it is that you do? And Dougie Fresh essentially said he wasn't that great at first, but eventually he fell into his own kind of style and his own sounds. But he was just a seeker of knowledge, a seeker of hip hop knowledge and hip hop experience. And so he learned from the very best by very simply humbling himself and asking. But you got to remember, these guys were like not men, they were kids. I mean, these are kids learning from kids, making music for other kids. So,
well, and the Forrest Gump comparison you made, when Biz would say, "Do you mind if I stop by and see how you do this?" He would come and basically never leave. It happens again and again and again. He'd keep inviting himself. He'd show up in the house, you know. And he just
and he didn't have a car or a cell phone or even a pager. And this is, you know, he's coming from far away, Long Island to Harlem. That's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. You get into the roots of hip hop, as Jim was saying, Sasha. You have this. Sense of, I think there was a line that you're talking about in the movie where the lunchrooms, the classroom experience was, you go to these lunchrooms and you do hip hop, you do your beatboxing in front of kids, other kids at high schools. And Biz was sort of bouncing around all over Long Island and New York City, right? I mean, he was just kind of this itinerant, it was almost like a troubadour, right? Going from lunchroom to lunchroom and doing his thing.
I mean, that's what's amazing about it. The talent was in the lunchroom, you know, like who knew? But he knew. He was the guy who knew that you go to the lunchroom to find the talent. And everyone swore that he went to their school because he would be there so much. But all these schools that he was visiting, the lunchrooms, he actually was not a student at any of those schools. And that would never, ever happen in 2023. There's no way some random kid slash adult would be in a lunchroom who didn't belong there.
Yeah, you couldn't even get into the school, right, nowadays, right, yeah. Without some kind of pass or something like that. But that's fascinating.
Nobody beats the Biz.
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 You know, he had a tough upbringing, as you said, and made it through the foster care system. We see his wife showing off his collection. He loved to collect these toys. You know? And you kind of posit gently that when he was a success, he was able to buy the toys he never had as a kid.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with hip-hop. Like, usually the second album is about how you blew up with the first album and, you know, no, the girls wouldn't want to get with you and you didn't have the best clothes. But usually by that second album, you know, they're talking about the jewelry they have. And, of course, Biz Markie had lots of jewelry, which you will see in the film. But while most people would just spend their money maybe on jewelry, he might buy a bunch of Barbie dolls from the 70s. It's still in the case. So what can I tell you?
Yeah. His collection was extraordinary.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned the fact that he was sort of a joker. Obviously, he was. He was the clown prince of hip-hop. And how this cut against the grain of what a lot of hip-hop or a lot of rap artists aspired to be at that time. Sasha, could you address how unique and also difficult that must have been? Like, you got to be really good to pull this off because everybody's doing this style in this way, the harder, the better. And then this guy's coming along telling jokes, and it's really cutting against the grain of where the music was headed, right? So how did he pull that off?
Well, I think ultimately it's because what he was doing was how hip-hop started. Hip-hop wasn't like gangsters and thugs. It was people in parks looking to have fun, looking to have lighthearted fun. So the way he expressed himself, his jokes, I mean, the dozens is a big part of hip-hop and black culture. So it's like he incorporated all these very familiar things that are in everyday life in the black community in a way that was true to himself, but also true to the essence of what hip hop was. It wasn't always about tough guys and hard asses. It was about like having fun. And Biz Markie is you mentioned Biz Markie to anyone, and the first thing they will probably say is fun. Like,
mm-hmm.
No one's mad. No one's angry. No one's trying to be something that they're not. No one's having to be insecure. And he's so comfortable with himself. He's talking about making songs about picking boogers. Like, everyone's at ease when they're around the guy.
Yeah, and picturing himself sitting on the toilet. And, you know, he was self-deprecating. But he had, you know, the thing is he seemed to have so much respect from his peers, who laughed along with him. But, you know, I'm thinking, like, just it was only a couple of years later that we have KRS-One bum-rushing PM Dawn, you know. And, you know, even De La Soul, who we have a little bit in the film, got a lot of crap, you know, for its hippie, you know, take on things, which never was really true. But Biz seemed immune to that.
Well, I mean, like the De La Soul guys, they're from Long Island, right? So they've got a chip on their shoulder. People are thinking these are some suburban middle-class blacks who don't fight, who aren't tough. So, of course, they're in a position where they've got to prove themselves. Biz was originally from Harlem, so he came from the hood. He moved to the suburbs with the foster family. So in his mind, he's probably like, I came from the struggle. Like, I don't want to be that. And I want to be in the suburbs having fun. So he didn't really have to anything to prove to anyone. That's mm-hmm. very comfortable in his skin. And I think that's a really important part of understanding him. The guy, for someone who many thought was, quote unquote, challenge, you know, had some challenges, he knew exactly, he was very conscious of how he was perceived. And he used that to his advantage. But also, he was very comfortable and understood who he was and just rolled with it.
People thought he was crazy when he wanted to record this song, Just a Friend. In fact, one advisor threw it off the hotel balcony, right? And it turns out, I mean, it's impossible to imagine this happening today. It turns out to be a huge hit, a top 40 hit.
Yeah, I mean, again, but I think it's the essence, it's the pure essence of Biz Markie, the sort of being off key and self-deprecating, but still confident at the same time. I think that song has all of that covered, and that's what why so many people are drawn to it.
Have you ever met a girl that you tried to date, but a year to make love, she wanted you to wait? Let me tell you a story of my situation. I was talking to this girl from the U.S. nation. The way that I met her was on tour at a concert. She had long hair.
In a world where everyone in hip-hop is serious, nobody's smiling, as Rakim said, Biz Markie smiling.
Right.
I mean, we went back to Rakim's lunchroom, and he wept, recounting, you know, where he was. When I asked him, so where were you when Biz Markie, when you heard he passed? And he said, I came right back to this very room, which I had no idea. And he said he came back to where I first met him in this room where we were rhyming together. You know what I mean? Rakim, the guy who famously said nobody's smiling, is crying.
Right.
He's not telling me to turn off the camera. He's having a real moment where he's just vulnerable. And I think with men in general and with black men specifically, that you don't often get those kinds of moments. And in hip-hop especially. But Biz Markie, all that stuff goes out the window. People love the guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, now in hip-hop, you would have gotten a high-level R&B singer, you know, to sing the hook, right? Let's get Rihanna on here to sing this. Right. And Biz sang it himself and woefully off key, but his whole heart and soul was into it. And it seemed to me somehow more, I think people took it as genuine. And, you know, you hear it to this day and you can't help but light up. It seems to be like he almost knew that it was so oddball that it was going to have some staying power. It was going to connect with people. I think you do a great job in the movie of talking about the vision that he had. Not just, you know, okay, I'm going to sing the hook because nobody else wants to, but then the whole concepts behind the videos and everything. It seemed like he had idea, you know, a fully formed idea of how he wanted to present himself, the image, everything. It all came together and it was all coming from him, basically, right?
He was a dreamer. You know, he wanted to dream a new life, a new existence for himself, and that's what's great about hip-hop. With hip-hop, you can completely control your destiny. You can design who you want to be. And he was an architect early on who understood that he could put on his hip hop cape and become whoever he wanted to be. And he knew exactly who he wanted to be.
Yeah.
Which most people at that age certainly don't know who they want to be. So it's pretty impressive.
You know, at first, Sasha, I was thrown by the deathbed scenes, and Biz, you know, was in the hospital for, what was it, a year, right, before his death at a ridiculously young age of 57. You know, we see Tara, his wife, with the puppet, and the doctors in the background. You know, and I was like, wow, is this too much, or what is it? And then I realized, wait a minute, this is the guy who loved doing Yo Gabba Gabba. Of course he loved puppets. This is perfect.
Right. I mean, and I honestly discussed this. I mean, I didn't discuss his wife playing herself with him in the hospital for a year. But we discussed things like puppets. And he, you know, he loved the show Crank Anchors. He was on the show. And I actually got one of the puppeteers from Crank Anchors to make the puppet. Mm. I mean, some people don't like puppet. Big Daddy Kane said he loves the film. He's not a fan of the puppet. He had a different relationship with Biz than any of us, so I have to respect his opinion and how he feels. But I know for a fact that he would have wanted that. I know for a fact that he was good with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oddly enough, it's a random story, but we were in Brooklyn going to the soundstage. We were scouting the soundstage where we were going to shoot the puppet scene. And I was making a joke about how we need to get a cereal box with Biz Markie on it called, like, you know, Biz's links, and the cereal would be his gold links from his gold chain.
Mm.
And someone tapped me on my shoulder and said, look over there. And there was a homeless guy with his shirt off with a dookie rope chain. I don't know if it was real or fake, but it doesn't matter.
Right.
Like,
right.
That was Biz Markie telling me I'm on the right path.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow, fascinating. You get into the Alone Again Naturally. Some people would say it ended Biz's career. Obviously, your documentary makes the case that it didn't. How big of a blow was that? I mean, you know, a landmark copyright case, you know, sampling a bit of this Gilbert O'Sullivan song from 1972, Alone Again Naturally, for Biz's hit, Alone Again. Apparently, your movie, too, and I hadn't heard this story, Sasha, about the label boss, if he'd simply anteed up $10,000 instead of trying to cut the price of the sample, would have cleared the sample and everything would have been fine. So on that few thousand bucks hangs Biz Markie's career, right? I mean, how did Biz handle that? What was your sense of how Biz was able to handle that blow?
I mean, no one really understood sampling at that point. It was still very early. I mean, obviously, if everyone knew that you just pay the guy and it would have been okay, they would have done it. But people were very arrogant at that point because they were so used to not clearing samples. So I think it was really a blow to Biz. I think he felt betrayed on some level. He felt like he couldn't make the music that he wanted to make because the hip-hop that he was reared on was like in the parks, and it was like DJs playing music and playing stuff that wasn't really intended to be rapped over, but it was rapped over. And I think that at that point, which the film kind of argues, he made the pivot towards being a DJ, and he wound up being a world-class DJ, one of the highest paid DJs in the world. So in a way, he was returning to the essence of hip-hop, which it all starts with the DJ anyway, right? So he's being true to hip-hop, but as far as being a rapper, making hip-hop music, I feel like he felt like that was, you know, how he wanted to do it wasn't possible anymore.
So well, and, you know, the system was rigged, Sasha. If you read up on that trial, which sets the precedent still to this day, the judge not only had to continually ask the lawyers for a definition of what R&B is, he was unfamiliar with the term. He also, in his ruling, you know, quoted the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not steal. And anybody who can listen to what Biz did versus what the original was, it's like, no, that's not stealing.
Right, right. I mean, that's what you're talking about is a whole other separate podcast that can go on for
years. Could. I was going to say, brother, that could be another hour-long documentary that would be fascinating.
Yeah, I'm staying away from, I recently did a series called Everything's Gonna Be All White. It was a 3-part series for Showtime, and I got barbecued even by black people. So I'm going to stay away from stuff for a while. But, sampling, it's an art form. Like, as Prince Paul says in the film, like, he should have learned from us. I mean, we went through it with the Turtles.
Right.
He should have read the writing on the wall, but he you know, he opened the floodgates and changed the game. So
yeah, those two cases together with Paul's Boutique, I mean, what a mess.
Yep.
I'm alone again, naturally. Alone again, naturally.
What's his legacy, Sasha? What do you think his... Do you see his influence today in hip-hop? How do people look back on his life and music today, and how does it hold up?
Today's hip-hop, I can't really comment on, but I will say that I think his legacy is being true to himself and sticking to his guns. You know, when no one else believed in Just a Friend, he did, and he stuck with it, and it was a major hit. I mean, and that philosophy is applicable to life in general, not just hip-hop, right?
But mm-hmm.
I think he was true to himself and true to who he was and was confident in that. And in that confidence, it warmed him up to so many people. And he had a hand in the careers of Big Daddy Kane and Rakim. Just that there is more than enough to make him someone who's super important. But then you connect him to beatboxing and sort of spreading that gospel, and you connect him to, you know, even though it changed the game, but, you know, it's sampling. I mean, this mm-hmm. film is really a hip hop film. It's about hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
It's about his, but really, if you pay attention closely, it touches on a lot of aspects of what hip hop culture is. And
yeah,
me in my twilight years, sort of nearing the end of my hip hop film phase, I felt like a good way to go out with hip hop.
Yeah. So, Sasha, one last thing. We ask our guests, such as yourself, to pick a track that they can't live without for today. You know, a Desert Island track, right? Doesn't have to be an all-timer, but what today would you take with you?
She's All Right by Muddy Waters off of the Electric Mud album.
Oh, that album, yeah.
You know, Jim and I talk about that album a lot because it doesn't get a lot of love from the purists, right? And I remember Chuck D talking to me about it once, and he loved that record. That was the record that got me into Muddy and et cetera. When did you hear that, and why did it strike you as a classic?
I've heard it first through, you know, Muggs from Cypress Hill samples it, and so then I got into discovered the record. I mean, I'm a guitar player. I love the blues. But I love psychedelic rock too, and it just, to me, it's just, I think Rotary Connection,
yeah,
was his back band. And I mean, the bass guitar playing on that album is just, it just hits me really deeply in my soul. Like I can feel the way the bass pulses in my arms. It's an amazing combination of like a real black man from the South who's been through some and some young black hippies who are making contemporary music of the time.
Yeah.
Putting that together is just like, I mean, to me, that could spawn a whole genre. I mean, I think that Jack White and, you know, the Black Keys, I mean, I think guys like that understand the potency of that sound,
mm-hmm.
have their own thing. But I think what that thing was, even though Muddy didn't like it, you know, he saw money in it. He was hoping that would make him, you know, rich.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I could have 20 albums and stuff that sounds like that. And apparently Hendrix really liked that album a lot.
Yeah.
Those are all Chicago guys. That was Louis Satterfield on bass, by the way. And Philip Church on guitars. I mean, great band. You're absolutely right about Rotary Connection. It was a fantastic project. And thank you for giving them some love. I don't know if we get given enough love to Rotary Connection
on
the show.
You know? I don't think so. We have mentioned Electric Mud from time to time, but I can't mention it too much.
That's right. Exactly.
I give all of my money. Tell me what more can I do? Well, I really don't believe you're going to give my money to you.
Well, it's quite an accomplishment, Sasha. All up in the biz. Congratulations. What a tribute. What a fascinating movie. Thanks for coming on Sound Opinions, man.
My pleasure.
That wraps up our discussion about Biz Markie. What a fun conversation with Sasha. Greg, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, another fun, deep conversation with another fantastic hip-hop artist,
yes.
Vic Mensa. And don't forget to check out our bonus podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts.
The views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this program belong solely to Sound Opinions and not necessarily to Columbia College Chicago or our sponsors. Thanks, as always, to our Patreon supporters. Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our Columbia College intern is Max Hatlam, and our social media consultant is Katie Cott.